Hebrews chapter 9. Thus it was necessary for the copies of the heavenly things to be purified with these rites, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ has entered not into holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true things, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God on our behalf. Nor was it to offer himself repeatedly, as the high priest enters the holy places every year with blood not his own. For then he would have had to suffer repeatedly since the foundation of the world. But as it is, he appeared once for all at the end of the ages to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And just as it is appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment, so Christ, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time, not to deal with sin, but to save those who are eagerly waiting for him. Today we're going to discuss various words for whatever you want to call it in the Bible: Sheol, afterlife, Hades, underworld. All of these actually show up in various Bible translations. We're going to discuss those words today and maybe a little bit more next week or the next. I read this passage just to make something clear, all right? In our discussions of the word hell, and I'm going to say things like hell as a term is often not a very good descriptive term or useful term to cover the various terms in the New Testament that are used. Let me make something clear, all right? What I'm not saying is there is no concept of judgment after this life, all right? Whatever we end up doing and discussing with the word hell today, let me make it very clear. God commands you, every one of you, to obey Jesus. All right? And if you do not, there will be consequences. All right? That much is really clear. Whatever word we end up assigning to various things, Hades, Sheol, hell, whatever, all right. This is not to get rid of the category. That's not my goal. All right. Just realize that this is all about trying to figure out what the Bible's saying in terms of what happens after you die. Okay. Or really, we're going to be focusing on the places. All right. The place names and whatnot. Okay. This is going to be very much a word study. But I just want to make it clear. All right. As we discuss various terms, and I say you probably shouldn't call this thing hell, all right? Not trying to get rid of the general category. The idea is very clear. Jesus is Lord, and you must follow him, period. All right? Amen. Period. So, for those of you who are on the church mailing list, I sent out a document last night. If you're not on the church mailing list, but just want the document, just give me your email after this, or Edward or Bill or something, and I'll send this to you. What it is, if you had a chance to look at it last night or this morning, though it was late that I sent it, what it is a few notes and a whole lot of Bible text exported from Logos Bible software. So what we're going to do today is I want to go through a bunch of various terms used in the Bible for the afterlife, Sheol, all that, okay? And so what I did, just because it's an electronic format, it's really easy to do that, is for these words, I found all of them in the Bible, and I exported them to a Word document, all right? Categorized in their groups so that you have all the same data that I'm looking at, okay? Because, as we'll see, some of these terms are masked by various English translations, all right? You might not know that one term is used here and another term is used in this other place because an English translation calls them both hell, for example. This is to help you make and see those distinctions. And so it is mostly, it's a few notes, but it is mostly just exported in parallel columns. Here's the KJV, the ESV, and the NET Bible for a bunch of different passages. Okay, so that's what that is. I'm also putting selections from literature between the Old and the New Testament because it does shed light on some of the terms and ideas that we'll see in the New Testament. So I've started putting some of that in the document as well. Expect another version of that document in a few days, or maybe before next Sunday. So don't like print it out or anything, because it's going to be changing as I put more in it, especially stuff that's related to intertestamental Judaism, right? The stuff between the Old Testament and the New. Okay? So let's dig in. The first word I want to talk about is the word Sheol. Okay? Depending on your translation, you will or will not actually see this word in the Old Testament. It's Sheol. Okay? What's the difference between a translation and a transliteration? Anybody? Yeah, Nina?
A transliteration, you just take the English equivalent of the letter from Greek. So that's how we got like baptized, or from whatever language. Mm-hmm. That's how we got like baptized. It's not a translation.
That's right.
It literally means just like to dunk under, right? Or to submerge.
Right.
And so to translate it would be to find the English equivalent of the meaning.
And that's a good example. All right, there's a Greek. She mentions, okay, there's a Greek word, baptizo, all right? When we say baptize, all right, baptize is just someone taking this Greek word and saying, well, the beta is a B, alpha, A, pi is a T, a P, and so on. Okay? That is not a translation, all right? Translation would be, as she said, like to dunk, or to dip completely under, would be the idea of baptizo. But this is a transliteration, not a translation. That's important to recognize. Like, for example, Sheol, if you ever see this, either in the text of the Bible, or what you'll often see in footnotes, like it'll have a little one, and you go down at the bottom in really small text, it'll say Sheol, right? This is a transliteration. This is a Hebrew term, and just generally means this is the place where people go when they're dead. All right, that's the general idea. And as we go through these terms today, I just want to look at like one or two instances of each, and that's all we'll do. So turn to Genesis 37:35. This is the first time in your Bible that this term shows up. The oldest are probably the ones in, because there's a lot of uses of this word in Job, but 37, so what has happened, Joseph has now been sold into, well, he has been sold into slavery. All right, Joseph, this would be the son of Israel, son of Jacob, all right. He has been sold into slavery, but his father thinks he is dead, right? That's the scene. And like 34, it says, then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, no, I shall go down to Sheol, ESV, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. All right. Now, if you look in the KJV, well, if you look at various translations, you're going to get different ones taking this differently. So the ESV has Sheol, like I said. King James Version has, for I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning. And the NET Bible has, he said, I shall go down to the grave mourning my son. In the Old Testament, Sheol is, it's not a positive thing, but it's not a negative thing, all right? Whenever we think of the term hell, we have very negative ideas, all right? You go to hell as a form of punishment, all right? Sheol, in a sense, is a form of punishment, right? Death comes because of sin, right? And so, in a sense, Sheol is a form of punishment, but the English word hell is, it really should not be applied to this Old Testament term, generally speaking, all right? And depending on your translation, you may see various different translations as you look at various different Bible versions. But generally speaking, Sheol just means that's where the dead people are, all right? When you are alive, you are not in Sheol, all right? When you are dead, you are in Sheol, all right? It is just the place of the dead. Sheol is generally down. All right. When the Bible talks about Sheol, heaven is up, Sheol is down, which is kind of natural, right? Alive people can stand up and walk and go places. Dead people are lying on the ground or really buried under the ground. This is the normal meaning of that term. All right, let's talk about now the New Testament. Now, Sheol does not, they talk about the place of the dead in the Old Testament using other words than just Sheol, but this is one of our main words, and it occurs 65 times in your Old Testament. Let's now talk about the New Testament. All right. Now, this is where the Bible translations can give us issues. Turn to Matthew chapter 11. Matthew chapter 11. Verse 23. I will read, this time I'll read from the King James Version. "And thou, Capernaum, which art exalted unto heaven, shall be brought down to hell. For if the mighty works which have been done in thee had been done in Sodom, it would have remained unto this day." English Standard Version and the Net Bible, they use the word Hades. Like, here's the Net Bible. And you, Capernaum, will you be exalted to heaven? No, you will be thrown down to Hades. For if the miracles done among you had been done in Sodom, it would have continued to this day. Okay, what is Hades? All right, Hades is another transliteration, right? If you know Greek stuff, like Greek, Greek mythology and whatnot, Hades is both a person, a god, right, and a place. In the Greek world, when you die, you probably will go to Hades, all right? Place and a god. Now, the New Testament was written in the Greek language. And so the New Testament uses this Greek term for the underworld, Hades, as one of its terms for talking about where you go after you die. All right? This doesn't mean that we should therefore take all of the Greek ideas in the world and pull them into this concept. All right? The New Testament does not teach a god named Hades so much, even though it is sometimes personified, Hades is. But this is the place where dead people go. Yeah?
It seems like it would have more in common with Sheol because it's kind of neutral. Like, people are judged there, but good people go there too. Like, the heroes are also in Hades.
Yeah.
The Elysian fields are part of Hades. So there's not the intense separation we think of when we think of, like, heaven and hell. It's more everybody goes there, and then
right.
You get whatever's going to happen to you.
Right. Everyone goes to Hades. Some of it, parts of it are good. Parts of it are bad. Yeah, totally. And we see that, all right? We see that, and we'll see that again in a minute. To make the link between Sheol of the Old Testament and Hades of the New, turn to Acts. Acts chapter 2, specifically. Yeah. Acts chapter 2, 27, yes. Yes, Jennifer.
Oh, the idea that Hades contains a good part and a bad part and everybody goes there, is that only Greek or is that also Christian?
I'm going to argue that that is also Christian, sort of. Okay. All right. There's another word that starts getting used. It gets used, I think, three times in the New Testament called paradise. I think, and this is why I give you all the data so you can make your own decisions. I think paradise is just the name they're giving to the good part of Sheol. All right. When you get in the Old Testament, it's not really clear that there is a good and bad part. By the New Testament, well, between the Old Testament and the New, Jewish thinking is yes, there is a good part and there is a bad part. And the New Testament picks up on that essentially. So yeah, I'm gonna argue that there is a good and a bad. And sometimes that term is given the word paradise. But it is ultimately the same general realm of Sheol. Acts chapter 2, And this is for us to make our link between Hades and Sheol, because we have an Old Testament quotation here. All right? Acts chapter 2, 27, in the ESV it says, "For you will not abandon my soul to Hades, nor let your Holy One see corruption." Or, King James Version, "Because thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption." All right? This is where we really start seeing what I think is a unfortunate fact about New Testament translations, all right, is sometimes they will use hell, which has definite negative connotations, all right, and applies it to a word that probably shouldn't be given that term, right? Who wrote this psalm? Who's this psalm about? Well, yeah.
David.
It's about David and about Jesus, all right? David probably thinks he's writing about himself, all right? He, being a prophet, is actually writing about Jesus, and that's actually, you know, Peter's point here in the sermon. This in the Old Testament is Sheol, all right? And they're using here the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, and it's not Sheol, because Sheol's Hebrew, all right? Greek people would be like, what's that? Those are weird letters that you have there. It's translated as Hades here. And if you go with, like, for example, the King James Version here, if you think about David, all right, did David have to worry about eternal punishment when he died? Is that the point that David is talking about in the Old Testament? Well, no, that's not what David's talking about. David's talking about, "You will not abandon my soul in the place of the dead," all right? "You will not abandon me there." It's not hell. It is Sheol. It is the place of the dead. Where when you get like the ESV or the Net Bible or really a lot of other modern translations, they will translate this as Hades, which doesn't necessarily have that negative connotation. Which theologically, just for you, something for you to think about, all right, when Jesus died, where did he go? Well, he went to Sheol. Alright, when I was younger, I used to think, alright, and I don't think this now, I used to think, alright, probably because of this kind of thing, that when Jesus died, he was then put in hell and punished in hell for our sins. I used to think that. I don't believe that's biblical. I don't think that's here at all. All right? Where did Jesus go when he died? He went where everyone goes when they die, which is Sheol. Jesus really died and went there and stayed there for 3 days and then rose again. Yeah.
So are you saying Sheol and Hades are the same thing? Both places?
That is what I'm saying. Yeah. That is what I'm saying. That ultimately, these two words are equivalent. Hades is the continuation of the Old Testament Sheol. And it's just the word they chose, all right, to do that. Make sense? Okay. One last one about Hades. Turn to Luke chapter 16. Of course, this is the one we discussed a few weeks ago, which was a part of sending us off on this particular area of study. Luke chapter 16, verse 19, "There was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate was laid a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who desired to be fed with what fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, even the dogs came and licked his sores. The poor man died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried. And in Hades, being in torment, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham far off and Lazarus at his side. And he called out, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the end of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in anguish in the flame.'" All right, so the rich man, there's the idea of flames and punishment, and it's very bad. All right, "But Abraham said, 'Child, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner bad things, but now he is comforted here, and you are in anguish. And besides all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been fixed, in order that those who would pass from here to you may not be able, and none may cross there to us.'" All right? And so, you know, then he asks, you know, have Lazarus come give me a little bit of water. And so Hades, as a term here, is used only for the rich man. All right? So in this case, the rich man is said to be in Hades. My general feeling, and you can think, you know, figure it out yourself. My general feeling is they're both actually in Hades. But they're in the same place, but they can't get to each other, right? There's a big chasm between the two. One is by Abraham, all right? Abraham does not belong, all right, in a place of torment. So Lazarus is by Abraham and at his side. On the other hand is the rich man in another place. He is in torment because he does actually deserve these things, all right? This is something that we'll see later on when we talk a little bit about Judaism between the Old and the New Testament. But I think that's how that works out, all right? You could, on the basis of this, try to argue that this is actually two distinct places. If so, then you got to come up with a name for it. And you might be able to do that. It might be paradise, something to think about. Okay, so that's Hades. Generally speaking, it is a place, it is Sheol, it is the place of the dead. Some people do get tormented there, though, all right? There's definitely an idea of torment here in this use of the word Hades. Yeah.
Does it seem to you in the Bible, or do you know if the place where Abraham is a good place or just like a neutral place where he's not being tormented but is being held, like the harrowing of hell thing where it's like the souls are just being held there until they can go to, and it's not good or bad, it's just kind of they're in a holding pattern.
If you equate that with paradise, then I would say it is actually a good place. Because paradise is a good place, right? It's a very pleasant place to wait as opposed to a very negative place to wait. And so, yeah, there would be, in that sense, rewards and therefore positive connotation to it. But it's not specified here, right? So you can't build too much theology off of this passage because it's the goal of this, honestly, the goal of the story is not, let's talk about the metaphysics of the afterlife. That's not the point of this story, right? The point of the story is, if you are rich in this life and wicked, you will be punished, all right? If you are poor but righteous, you will be in a good place. You will be at Abraham's side in the end. So it's not really trying to let's talk about the afterlife, theologically speaking, and make a systematic theology. That's not its point. But I think ultimately it's a good place.
Do you think the wicked and righteous will be together?
No, that's my point. They're separated.
Okay.
Yeah. And like here. And if this is the only place where that's the case, then maybe, okay, well, it's the whole discussion of this is this a parable or is this actually actual two people, right? But we'll, in intertestamental Judaism, they really were kept separately. That was the idea. And I think that's carried over into the New Testament. Yeah.
Just about whether Abraham's side is a good place, I think the point of it is definitely that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Lazarus is carried by the angels to that place. Contrast to the wicked rich man,
mm-hmm,
who is in torment.
Yeah.
Is Lazarus in a good place? Definitely.
I think so.
And can we make sweeping, conclusions about what the afterlife is like from that? Maybe not, but definitely comparing and contrasting their situations in death.
I agree. I agree. Sure. Yes.
It's a NET, NASB, ESV, New King James, NRSV, all do Hades.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, the New International Version does hell.
Hell.
So I think that they probably are accepting the bifurcation. Like, so if Hades has a bad place, that's hell. And if Hades,
yeah,
has a good place, that's paradise.
Yeah.
It's all Hades.
Yeah. So, yeah, depending on your translations, you'll get different times when Hades is translated hell versus just transliterated as Hades. Like here, you said NIV, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, in all the places in the ESV, it is always translated Hades, except for one, all right, where it is translated hell, which is very frustrating, because you're like, why, all right? And then in the NET Bible, it is translated Hades in all of them, except for one, but it's a different one than the ESV does, which gets to the point I've made many times before. Translation, all right, is an interpretive exercise. That's why it's good for us to use multiple translations, all right? There's no such thing as completely unbiased, perfect translation. Translations are the best tool we have, all right, as Bible students. They definitely are, but they are not perfect, as we all know. They are interpretations. And so when the NIV chooses to translate this particular one as hell, they are looking at it and going, theologically, punishment, hell, all right? When the ESV translates, and the gates of hell will not stand against us, but that's actually Hades, they are, for historical sake, to keep with the King James, or for just theological sake, making a statement about hell. It's Hades. All right. In the NET Bible, I don't actually remember which one they translated as hell, but it was only one as well. And so using multiple translations can help with that. What's that?
It's this one.
It's this one? Okay. Yeah.
What's the difference between paradise and heaven and is there?
Good question. Later. What's the difference between paradise and heaven? Good question. Let's go to our next term, and we will be discussing that, but not today. We won't get into it in detail.
It seems a little bit of a crazy discussion.
It's relevant, though. It is relevant. Next one. The abyss. Okay? Now, the question will be, is this the same thing as Hades? All right, that's something I will let you try to figure out. But let's look at some instances. Look at Luke 8:31. You know, as we go through these terms, you know, if you're not on the mailing list and you want, like, this has all this data for you, right? And if you're on the mailing list, you have it in your email inbox. It says all this data, and so you don't actually have to look all of these up. Luke 8:31. So this is the story of Legion, all right? And the demons that are in the man, the demon-possessed man, verse 31, and they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Oh, large herd of pigs were feeding there on the hillside, and they wanted to go into the pigs. All right, the abyss. This is the first instance of the abyss that shows up in the New Testament. You see it in Romans, one place. In Revelation, you see it a number of places. All right. Revelation 9:1, and the fifth angel blew his trumpet and saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth, and he was given a key to the shaft of the, they translate it, bottomless pit, but it is abyss. All right. You've got, for that same one, you've got bottomless pit in the King James Version. In the NET Bible, you have the shaft of the abyss. All right. So abyss is, once again, actually a transliteration. All right. Our English word abyss is just the Greek word abyssos, turned into English letters. That's all it is. When you see something like the bottomless pit, that is actually a translation, right? It is actually a translation. So you see it there, and then, you know, 9:2, he opened the shaft of the abyss, or the bottomless pit, and from the shaft rose smoke like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened with the smoke from the shaft, all right? Verse 11, and the king... And they have a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit. His name is, in Hebrew, is Abaddon. And in Greek, he is called Apollyon. All right? I'm going to argue that this is at least a part of Sheol. All right? Based on Revelation 9:11. But I'm not going to tell you why. I'm going to make you think about it. All right? I think it makes that argument pretty good. And there's other uses of abyss in the New Testament. It shows up 9 times. Okay? So this is a place where, you can argue is definitely at least related to Hades. Maybe it is a part of Hades. Maybe it is the same thing. this is related to that, but it is a place that not necessarily dead people go, though maybe. It is a place where demons can be placed. Okay? Demons can be placed there. Or, in Revelation, demons can be let out of there. And that's part of the point there. Okay? So that's another word, and that is abyss. And it is just a transliteration, once again. It means some sort of pit. All right. Next one. Gehenna. All right. The translations, they don't ever, as far as I know, ever translate the abyss as hell. Gehenna is often translated that way, and I think that's problematic. So let's go with Matthew chapter 5, if you'll turn there. Okay. Matthew chapter 5, verse 22, and the NET Bible and the King James Version and the ESV all translate this as hell. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, "You fool," will be liable to the hell of fire. Or in verse 29, if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into Gehenna or hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose, this is the next verse, you know, you lose one of your members that your whole body go into Gehenna, or as they translate it, hell. Okay, so this is something that you're going to have to figure out, all right, as a part of your Bible study. Is this the same thing as Hades? All right, is it the same thing as Hades? One thing you can see from these, yeah?
Is it a Greek word, or is it a transliteration of a Hebrew word into Greek? Or what is
it? So Gehenna as a term is, English Gehenna is a transliteration of a Greek term Gehenna, which is itself a transliteration of a Hebrew term Gehenna.
Which would be distinct from Sheol, because that's also a Hebrew. So
they are different words. They are definitely different words. And notice also, in all of these, in all instances of Gehenna in the New Testament, and they all occur in the Gospels, on the lips of Jesus, all right? All of them are negative. They are all related to punishment, all right? Where Hades is often not. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Gehenna is always bad, all right? You do not want to go to Gehenna under any circumstance, all right? Mm-hmm. Right. That would be the argument. There's only one problem, all right, with just go ahead and calling this hell, and, you know, as in terms of, you know, someplace you might go eternally. The only problem with this, and this is something I want you to think about in terms of context, in terms of the uses in the Gospels, is there is one place where this is used to refer to AD 70. Okay? Because he's talking to the Jewish leaders, and he says, if you don't change your ways, you're going to go to Gehenna, and you know what? And this is going to happen in this generation. All right? That's the New Testament sign for Rome is going to come and punish this city and his people. All right? What's that? They will bring the hell. And so Gehenna, and that is one that makes this difficult. All right? So the passages are all there. I want you to go read them and think about them. It is something we'll discuss more in the near future. Okay? So that's Gehenna. It is a transliteration of a transliteration. And by the way, Gehenna as a Hebrew term means the valley. It's referred to in the Old Testament. In the document that I sent you guys, I have some passages where it's referred to. It's the valley of the sons of Hinnom in the Old Testament. So it does show up there. If you want to go look them up. Yeah. It is used in the Old Testament, yeah. Now it's there, it's in the Old Testament, it is not used as a place of punishment. It is not actually in the Old Testament an equivalent to Sheol. It is a place where people go when they're alive. All right, Jesus is here talking about it in a different way than the Old Testament talked about it. If you go look it up, you'll see that. It is not, clearly not Sheol in the Old Testament. All right. So Gehenna is an interesting case. I think a very interesting case that we'll have to think through. And it shows up 12 times. What's that? It shows up in the Apocrypha. There's a, you'll get lots of selections from First Enoch, and we'll talk about that another time. Tartarus. If you know your Greek mythology, this should be familiar. Okay? Tartarus. A Tartarus-related word occurs one time in the New Testament. Turn to 2 Peter 2:4. Peter 2:4, for if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to chains of gloomy darkness to be kept until the judgment, if he did not spare the ancient world but preserved Noah, herald of righteousness with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly, and so forth. This phrase, cast them into hell, in English, in the ESV, cast them down to hell, which is nice. It's got that downward thing in the KJV. Threw them into hell in the NET Bible. All right. They all translate it this way. This is actually this is actually a verb in Greek. It's tartarao. It means to throw into Tartarus. All right. Now in the Greek world. Generally speaking, not everyone goes to Tartarus when they die. This was like a special place of punishment, all right? You might throw, okay, the evil Cyclopses in Greek myth into Tartarus for special punishment there, all right? That's the idea here. Now, Peter uses this term right here in some special way. Now, who is he talking about here? Is he talking about humans, or is he talking about fallen angels, all right? Interesting question, all right? Not one we'll jump into today, but this is one that, once again, because it's translated as hell, it sounds like this same term and this same term, all right, depending on your translation, when I really do think it should be treated separately. But think about that one, and it's one that we'll get into more later, because there's other literature we can bring to bear on that. All right, the next one is not a term. It is a couple words together, and it is the lake of fire. Turn to Revelation 19, verse 20. This is probably... this probably occurs in Matthew 25 in a few places. The word lake is not used, but we'll start with just these where lake is actually used. And these only occur in the book of Revelation. Revelation 19:20, and the beast was captured, and with it the false prophet who in its presence had done the signs by which he had deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped its image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur. Go to the next chapter. Revelation 20, verse 10. And the devil who had deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet were, and they will be tormented day and night forever. All right? Is this hell? All right? Is this hell? Should this be equated with the bad side of Hades or Gehenna? All right? And the answer, it is certainly not Hades. 100%. This is not Hades. How do we know? Revelation 20:14. then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if we think to the big story of redemption, right? Think back, like when we were discussing the incarnation, right? Why did Jesus have to become man? Jesus had to become man so that he could die a human death and take that punishment, all right? Jesus had to go to Hades, all right? Jesus had to go to Hades. And he had to go to Hades for us so that we wouldn't be stuck there, all right? Hades was not something that really should have existed. You don't need Hades if man doesn't sin, right? Hades is the place of the dead. Men don't die unless they sin. So ultimately, in the long arc of redemption, all right, Hades is something created for fallen creatures. But in the end, because it's not needed anymore, God will destroy it too. All right? That's the point here of Revelation. So this thing, all right, there will be a point, according to Revelation, that Hades gets emptied, right? Hades gets completely emptied, and it itself is thrown into the lake of fire. So therefore, if you want to talk about hell and call this hell, then you can't call this hell, because they're two different things. Okay? Yeah.
Do you think the abyss and the lake of fire have some sort of connection?
I think they are different things, because I think the abyss is a part of Hades and will itself be destroyed. But I'm still letting you find that connection with the Old Testament that I think makes that clear. Yeah.
If Hades is destroyed, what happens to the people that are in Hades?
Good question. And this is something that is in here at the end of Revelation. And the idea is this. Sheol/Hades is the place of the dead and is a waiting place. All right? It has, when you get to the New Testament, not the Old, but when you get to the New, there is a good part of Hades, and there is a bad part of Hades, all right? And depending on your life, you will go to one or the other. At the end of Revelation, all right, there is the final judgment. There's the final judgment. And at that point, Hades is emptied. Those who believe in Christ, they don't go back to a place of the dead. They are resurrected. They are given bodies again to live on a new heaven and a new earth. Those who did not believe in Christ, right, or in the Old Testament, were not, the faithful people of God, different times, they will then be thrown into the lake of fire, this right here. And so Sheol is emptied. They have to go one of two places. And that's going to either be the lake of fire, or they will be resurrected to live on a renewed earth. Right? Good question.
And God's fixed everything.
And at that point, there is no need for a Sheol, because God has indeed fixed everything. Yes, Chip.
So the expression, someone dies, they're going to say he's gone to be with the Lord. It's not true, is it?
We'll get to that in a minute. Because we are going to cover some of the positive terms as well. All right? We'll talk about that in just a second. Next term, and we're going to have to go very quickly at this point. Outer darkness. I'll just read it for you. Okay? Outer darkness. Is this talking about Hades? Or is this talking about Gehenna? Or is this talking about something else? Outer darkness. Matthew 8:12. While the sons of the kingdom will be thrown into the outer darkness, that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Matthew, this only occurs in Matthew. Matthew 22. Then the king said to the attendants, bind him hand and foot and cast him into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Matthew 25:30. Cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. All right? It is clearly a place of punishment. Is it the same thing as Gehenna? Is it Hades? Good question. Gloom of darkness. All right? Gloom of darkness. We might want to just go ahead and say these are probably the same thing. But still, different phrase. These don't occur in the Gospels, though. The others were all in Matthew. May not be the same place, actually. 2 Peter. Let's go to Jude instead. Jude 13. Let's read this one. All right. Started like 11. Woe to them. This is Jude 11. Woe to them, for they walked in the way of Cain and abandoned themselves for the sake of gain to Balaam's heir and perished in Korah's rebellion. These are hidden reefs at your love feast as they feast with you without fear. Shepherds feeding themselves. Waterless clouds swept along with winds, fruitless trees in late autumn. Twice dead, uprooted. Wild waves of the sea casting up the foam of their own shame. Wandering stars from whom the gloom of utter darkness has been reserved forever. Gloom of utter darkness. And 2 Peter calls them the waterless springs and mist driven by a storm. For them the gloom of utter darkness has been reserved. The thing to think about in Jude, all right? Remember, whenever someone starts referencing stars, all right, you should automatically start thinking about not people, all right, but heavenly beings, fallen or otherwise. So in this case, wandering stars for whom the gloom of utter darkness has been reserved forever. 2 Peter 2:17 and Jude 13 should be treated together and discussed together. Something for you to think about. Next term, paradise. Paradise is actually a transliteration, Greek term paradisos. It occurs in Luke, like when Jesus is on the cross, and he says to the thief, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." Okay. In 2 Corinthians 12, Paul knows a man, all right, who was caught up, all right, into paradise. Or in Revelation 2:7, it talks about the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God. And of course, there's things at the end of Revelation that don't use the term paradise, but sure seem to be talking about it. The Luke one is interesting for you to think of, and this gets to your question, Chip. All right. Jesus says, "Today I will see you in paradise." All right. Where was Jesus going that day? He was going to Hades. All right. Yes, Bill?
He said, "Today you will be with me in paradise, not you'll see me in paradise."
Yeah, that's right. You will be with me in paradise. All right, so where is Jesus going? Jesus is going to Hades. He is going to the place of the dead, and he will be there for 3 days. Right? Where is the thief going? Also Hades. It's the place of the dead. He is also going to die. But this thief is going to go to the good part of Hades. And who will be there with him? Well, Abraham and also Jesus. Okay? Now, how long did Jesus stay in paradise? 3 days. Something to throw into questions of what's exactly it like after you die, Chip. But in this particular case, this is not talking about heaven, right? The thief on the cross did not go to the throne room of God. I don't think that's the idea here. Yeah.
To respond more fully to Chip's question, Paul, writing as an apostle, a Christian, says of himself, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. So there's a sense in which in the place of the dead, the righteous dead, they are with the Lord. So whether that's they're being held in the hand of God, like the souls under the altar until the final judgment, whatever it means, it's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I really do want to come to a firm conclusion on what exactly that's like. I, so far, have not. But here's three passages, one of them which you just quoted. All right, and this is in the document I sent, is in the Miscellaneous New Testament Selections. 1 Peter 3:18-20. Well, this one's different. We'll come back to that one. The one from 2 Corinthians. "Yes, we are of good courage, and we would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. For we all for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. Right? Away from the body to be home with the Lord. Or Philippians chapter 1, Paul talks about, I am hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ. He's talking about death. Right? He wants to die. For that is far better, but to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Paul wants to leave, all right, because he will in some way be closer to the Lord in death. What exactly does that mean? I actually don't know, but it's something to think about. So at least if, you know, theologically we know, for Christians, is it a good thing to die? And the answer is yes. It is good. Is that the best thing? No. The best thing is not our death to be with the Lord, but resurrection. Because that's ultimately the end of all of that. All right? Is, yes, to be dead and to perhaps be in paradise if we want to. Yeah, there it is. Be in paradise. It is a good thing. But the ultimate is not that. The ultimate is resurrection. Not to be absent from the body. To actually have a body once again. Yeah.
So it seems like one way in which if you're in paradise and you're not physically with the Lord, but you haven't been resurrected yet, it's a good thing though, because it's a more, it seems like it would be a more full expression of sanctification, because you're no longer struggling with the flesh, or mm-hmm. like there are no temptations, I would yeah. think, in paradise. And you get to talk to Abraham, which would be cool, because we know he's there.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we do know, I guess, is he's there. So it seems like it would be a good place. Not struggling with your flesh anymore, which is better.
Yeah. Agree.
The point is that, or one of the things that Christ does in his victory is he delivers Christians from the fear of death,
mm-hmm.
which is called the sting.
Mm-hmm.
Calls fear of death sting.
Yeah.
And in general, all people are terrified of death. And but we can't see all this clearly. We should know enough to not be terrified of death.
Amen. Yeah.
I think that's the point of all the passages about paradise. It's a comfort. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Thief on the cross, you're being crucified right now. I know.
Don't worry.
Two. Don't worry.
Yeah.
You'll be with me in paradise. It's
yeah.
intended to be a comfort. When Paul says, I want to depart. I want to be with Christ. Isn't he with Christ when he's alive? Well, yes, but not that way.
Not that way.
And for Paul, it's a comfort. He says, eventually it's going to happen, and it's better. I would rather that be the case.
Yeah. So, my recommendation, if you're curious about this study, is go back and read those passages, right? They're exported in that document I sent you, all right? So you don't have to look them all up. For all of the ones I did look, that are exported into it, it only gives you one verse. So if you see some and you don't know exactly what this means, then go back to your Bible, look in the context, all right? That's going to be necessary for some of them for sure, okay? So think about it more, and we'll discuss it next time.